November 27, 2020, it's a lot from Pedro Show.
Frosted glass bowl, oranges, and the green hills of home. Your warm smile still warms me, Patrick Young, Patrick Old. Black hat for your birthday, clean shirt and tie as a rule, from Sligo to Cotton Town. always well dressed, always well groomed, always a joker in the room. A cigarette and whiskey man, old vinyl on the radio, and back into your overalls, back to work at the loom, a laugh for me on leaving, and always leaving too soon. I wish I could have asked you more. Hear your untold story unfold. But your warm smile still warms the room. Patrick Young, Patrick Old, Patrick picture on my wall.
Black Hat Pedro Show. Happy Friday, last Friday of November, almost on the December, and we're less than a month from Watt turning 63, or beginning my 63rd lap around the sun. We started with Like Sunny, also known as Simple Like, John Coltrane, and then Always the Joker from Neil Turpin. My guess, yes, people, even though Brother Matt's at the Love Grotto a couple miles south from the Pleasure Point, because we're still in quarantino mode, which is important. We're going to kick this fucker in the ass. Don't take it so lightly, people. Anyway, get off my soapbox and welcome aboard Neil Turpin. You're calling me from, or speaking to me, because of those righteous software engineers in Estonia with their Skype invention, all the way from Leeds, right?
Well, I used to live in Leeds, and that's where we met. But I'm currently at my girlfriend's house, so I'm talking to you all the way from Derby.
Derby, which is spelled Derby. I've learned this, and also a great lady on electronics. We're gonna play some music from her, Delia. Derbyshire, not Derbyshire.
Yeah.
I think it was Bertrand Russell. Two people divided by a common language.
Exactly, yeah. I think he hit the nail on the head.
But anyway, okay. So, and this gets back to something my pop said. You know, that word was not spelled by accident, boy. When you assume, you make an ass out of you. Me, and that's what I did. By just because I played with you 5 years ago at a Cuz gig, Cuz Bill's Pump gig, at Nathan and his Ma's pad in Leeds, the Broodnail Social, great pad to play, fucking bitchin' pad. Listeners, I want to tell you, it ain't in some merch. I think in the old days it was a working man club. It's in a neighborhood. Just the thing is set up great, too. All the sight lines, everybody gets a good view, good sound. People working there are bitching.
That's where everybody kind of likes it, is that it doesn't really conform to your typical gig setup.
Right.
And you're right, it was a working men's club. And right. I think just because it's still got that kind of old-fashioned feel to it, that it was like a breath of fresh air when it started putting on live music.
Yeah, and one of the rooms got the regulars, the older guys. Yeah, and I played a few of those in England. One up in Hebron, Salisbury Bridge, Hebron Bridge.
Oh, Hebron Bridge. Yeah.
Yeah, like that. We're talking two bridges right on each end of a valley, people. This is from the old days of textile mills were on this river and stuff, and things changed, and you know, like they do. But they could tell each other which bridge it is by the accents, and it's only like a couple miles. It's amazing, man. Touring is such a fucking educational thing for me. So I'm missing that more than maybe the, whatever, riding in the fucking cylinder, breathing people's farts. I just love going to different pads and learning about why it's there. So I want to learn about your journey through music. What's your earliest musical recollection, please, Neil?
I think it's at my grandparents' house. They had a gramophone, like the big sort of sideboard piece of furniture with built-in speakers and a turntable. And my granddad would play like sort of Irish flute music, James Galway. But the thing that I really remember reacting to was this sort of comedy song called Lily the Pink by a Liverpool band called The Scaffold. And it's just a daft comedy song, but it just kind of, I don't know, I was really young, sort of 5 or 6 years old, and, you know, I really got into it, and I was singing along to it. So I think I probably remember, like, my grandparents or my mum's reaction to me getting into it as much as I do hearing the tune, but that was the one that stuck with me. And I knew you were going to ask me this question, so I Googled the song, and it's surprising because...
Ian MacKay would say, you used a search engine. Right? No beer commercials. Yeah. No beer commercials. Like, yeah, when I take pictures, I never show the beer bottle, the whiskey bottle or something.
So if it was the BBC, I would have to say other search engines are available. So.
Well, I got correct. Well, I heard a story about Ian MacKay. Correct, he's a great cat. In the what town was this in? Did you grow up in, Neil?
Well, I grew up in Preston.
In what big town is that by?
Preston is quite close to sort of Manchester.
Oh, okay, which is north of Liverpool, and yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's northwest England and Lancashire.
The big Lancashire town is Lincoln, right? And then to get to, one time I had to play Mr. Mark Riley's show, and then in Sheffield, so I went through the big forest. It's called the Serpentine, the road that goes through this forest.
Okay,
you're probably aware of that. But in the pad there in Preston, was there musical instruments?
No, not at all. It was really. None of my family play music, so it was just really the influence of what I was listening to and my friends at school who started learning to play guitar.
Well, what about like the school stuff, like marching band or the choir, were you in shit like that?
A bit later, yeah. I'd already got into playing the drums, but when I went to secondary school, when I was 11, I joined the school brass band on drums.
Okay.
Let's
go back a little bit. What about the first record you bought with your own money?
It's gonna be Adam and the Ants.
Ah, man, we had somebody on the show a couple of weeks ago. They said the same thing.
Yeah. I can't remember exactly which album, but I do remember buying Dirk Wears White Socks on tape. When I was really young, that was like perhaps my sort of ninth birthday or something like that. So that's a contender for the first one that I remember.
And what about the first gig you went and saw?
That one was Motorhead. That was in 1984, so I would have been 10 years old.
All right. That's a good band. Good bass player.
Yeah.
Good drummer, good guitar, you know, Fast Eddie and Filthy. And
yeah, I don't think it was the classic lineup, but I mean, I didn't care about things like that then. I was just...
They already made the tunes that the other guys were covered. You know, you said you went and joined the drums to be in the brass band. What led you to drums?
I think it was just a really sort of practical decision. A couple of my friends at school were playing guitar, and I just thought, okay, well, if I play the drums, that means we can have a band. So it was like a really kind of functional, okay, I'll just learn this instrument, and then we can have what we, you know, what I thought would be a band. So it really was something just like that, you know. And in my 10-year-old head, that was perfectly normal and
or pragmatic. We don't like that word normal.
You know. It's obviously a totally weird thing, but in my head, it seems completely.
Yeah, it makes perfectly sense. And actually, the heart of rhythm music is the drums anyway. You were way ahead of everybody anyway. What about, now, you went to school, so you're playing the school shit, but what about you getting your own trap kit?
That was, when I expressed, like, an interest in learning the drums, like, to my mum, she said, well, okay, we'll find you a teacher. And she said, if you're still interested after 3 months of lessons, then we'll think about getting you a drum kit. So I had, you know, I went for lessons for 3 months and passed this sort of probationary period. and during that time, I'd cobbled together some sort of, you know, I had an old bucket as a bass drum. And I had like a practice pad as a snare drum, and my drum teacher had handed down some old broken cymbals. So I had the kind of, you know, a really, really rickety sort of makeshift drum kit to play on. So after the 3 months, I was still like totally raring to go and into it. And, you know, it was like Christmas time. So yeah, my mum sorted me out with a secondhand Premier kit.
Premier. That's what's Keith Moon saying on Sellout. Premier drum. Premier drum. Yeah. And when we were boys, me and D Boom thought he was saying, play your drums. Play your drums. Look, I'm gonna play Crack in the Pavement.
1, 2, 3, 4. Chattering classes are baking while history is in the making. White men in tights, all bluster and lies, take everything and screw the world before our eyes. don't like to complain. Yet I cannot deny that these are the grievances and otherwise of a ne'er-do-well. Just trying to do well. And almost happy is crack in the
in my father. morality.
Baby, now I did dumb shit and I can't let it hold me back. Just rolling pains, I be plants, I make women on the vertebrae. Money make a move with my urgency. But what you gon' do when you burned all the green? Currently in the state of care that your spirits turned that bitch to. And nobody can hear you. Think nobody can feel you, baby. Think nobody can feel you. Nobody can feel you. Race pollute like big business. It won't be in existence with no consumers in this. Or maybe it's survival of the fittest. You selling or you buying. You dying or you living. Wicked to be trying censorship. We caught you stealing. Land and resources. Demand more from me. Selfless. Nah, best believe we seek more than fortune. Some man can offer us. Wanna share it with the whole world, babe. Every time I close my eyes, I hear silent mind in the darkest light. When that war for peace, need none but the love suffice. Patience, we hate waiting, time sink, traffic and train stations. It's transmission and transportation, fascination, turn witness, IGA permission. Someone still gon' take the picture, Eagle eye, phone flash, ready, cash and fly. Live my life ready to die in the crash of the hues of God. We stray, but we ain't lost, follow divine law. We try to rule of the truth, the leaves fall off. So what you gon' do in order? Green gone, baby. What you gon' do in order? Green gone, baby. What you gon' do in order? Green gone, baby. What you gon' do in order? Green gone, green gone.
to shine to you. It was all that I could do. When you took a shine to me, it was all that I could see. And I'm not an island, merely an ocean. No sooner away than barely a notion.
Pedro show, yeah, Neil Turpin from his solo album, people. It's his great record, and Cracking the Pavement. No, this is newer than the new record. This is newer than new, people. Then Rain yeah. Song from Sawako for Kosei Kamatsu Studio Exhibition 00, well, in Japan, Tokyo, I think, but she's in Nagoya. But, you know, magic of internet, right? I've made whole albums with people I've never even fucking met. I love it. Hell Beings from Brighton with God of Paper, Scissors, Stone. You know about that game, right? Solo demo. So it's about, it's the seed of what to become. Bulma's Preden for a long time. The Tuminal Splendor, which we're in right now. Except you can't tell in SoCal because we ain't got those kind of trees. 38 Angry Tires, Johnny Marks and the Ricks with the late, great Frank Yonwe from Suburban Lawns, Jigglypuff, must be inside band semantic right there, and Nappy Napa, sorry, brother, he's got bitchin' new album, people. He's one half of the Model Home, not Mobile. Green on All Sides, IOM, Post DC, that's brand new. Dose with Side Mouse Advice, Kill Rock Stars putting out a vinyl version, Ustamente Trace soon, and then finally, this is from the new album, Barely a Notion, Neil Turpin. Okay, so you're talking about, yeah, you want to get a drum to play with your buddy. So you do have a garage band, basement band, bedroom band, whatever the fuck. A bed sit? That word. I remember that in a Clash song I heard that word, bed sit. But your first band is with friends from school, right?
Yeah, we were jamming in my bedroom on my, you know, little makeshift drum kit. And then when I got the real thing, then we just continued, you know, they just bring around their guitars and practice amps. And then when I went to secondary school, I joined a brass band, with one of my guitarist friends who opted to play the cornet. So we basically struck this deal with the music teacher who was the leader of the brass band, and he let us use a practice room after school hours to sort of do our own thing. Do our little like rock band, you know, and our part of the bargain was sort of playing our part in his brass band.
Sure, sure. Yeah, it was a barter. But that's beautiful that he'd be open-minded and not just use a fucking authority trip on you. I'm curious, like, even before this in the bedroom, were you copying off records or writing your own shit?
Yeah, we were trying to do, we were all into like metal. So we were doing AC/DC on Black Sabbath. Okay. You know, to the best of our ability.
Yeah, sure, sure. Me and Dean Boone with Creedence and Blue Oyster Cult. but I've had people on the show that started writing shit right from the get-go. That's one of the beautiful things, I think, of the movement. But, okay, so you got this prac room. That means you can play loud and shit.
Yeah.
And does this band start making its own material?
It does, yeah. We ended up... We played together for a few years, just through school, really. So probably for like 4 or 5 years. And we ended up making a demo with, I think there were like four original songs on it. So we did get around to, like, yeah, writing as well as just, like, doing cover versions.
What about gig? What was the first gig? What, did this band have a name?
It did, yeah. It was called Infiltrator.
Of course.
I can't believe I'm sharing.
Well, that's four syllables. I mean, hang on. So what was the first Infiltrator gig like, Neil?
Well, we were a thrash metal band, so we thought the name, you know, it was kind of like there were bands around with similar sounding names. So what, you know, we just thought, oh yeah, we need to sound like this.
But, well, it's better than Constipator.
I don't know. That's pretty good. The first gig, it would have been at school or at a local youth club, one of the two. Because we played gigs in a handful of youth clubs, and we definitely did one gig at school as well. So,
but you can only have the first gig once. That's why I'm interested.
Yeah, I mean, if we're getting down to like the absolute first gig, then it was in the brass band for me, because the brass band used to go around in a coach and enter like competitions with other schools' brass bands.
Oh yeah, that's over here. Like Billy Cobham comes out of that drum corps stuff in New York City, where they do paradiddles to hold up a quarter on the bulkhead. They go down to dimes. You know, paradiddle, right? You got to keep hitting it so the thing don't fall down.
Wow.
Yeah, a little bit of competition, right?
Yeah, well, I can't say that there was anything that technical going down in my brass bands, but, you know, it was like my first experience of just playing with a load of other people and just doing it live and kind of getting thrown into it at a really early age as well. You know, I was probably maybe like 11 or 12 when those brass band gigs were happening.
Wow.
And it was more like 14, 15 when the little thrash metal band started doing gigs. Yeah,
Infiltrator. But that's what I asked about, the first Infiltrator gig. What was that like?
Okay, well, the one that is probably the first one was at a youth club in the little town where my school was. And I got some great photographs of it, actually, because, you know, all the kids from the school came to it, basically. And, you know, everyone's wearing denim jackets and, like, studded wristbands. And, like, they got metal patches on their denim jackets. And, like, the makings of long hair, it's just everyone's just beginning to sort of grow their hair, like, over collar length.
Were you scared?
I don't know. I don't remember being scared, actually. I don't know. I just remember...
No, I asked that because I always am shitting a fucking pecan log. Did it go over good?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a weird thing to try and remember, like, those parts of it. You know, we got a great response. Like, the kids were, like, crushed right up to the front of the stage.
Oh, right.
Like it was, you know, Metallica gig or something, so...
Well, if you're going to cover
heads,
a song...
In our heads, it was like, yeah, we're doing this now.
Yeah, if you're going to cover a song, why not cover a gig? The whole thing, you know, with the crowd and everything. Now, that's bitching. Now, look, the first time I heard you, I have to say, it's from a record called Solanke. So how long down the road is Solanke?
We did that record in 1997, and we started a couple of years before that, so... You know,
it's a big talking, period. It's a big period. Okay.
Yeah, like that band. Yeah, we're talking 25 years ago, and also, you know, a good 6 years after the thrash metal thing at school.
Because Solanke is nothing like thrash metal. In fact, in some ways, it's a weird, I don't know, approach kind of Minuteman. I mean, and in a way, it seemed like the record was a little bit of the tribute to Buzzer Howe.
Very much so. Yeah, I mean, that was like. Me and Seth, the bass player, were just huge Minutemen fans, and we were both playing in different bands at the time that were more based around, you know, they had longer songs, time signatures, quite technical, and a lot of time needed practicing to perform them live. So we wanted to just do something that was just really direct and to the point, and that we could, you know, just kind of like thrash out with tons of energy. And we both love the Minutemen, so we just wanted to do, you know, a Minutemen band. Simple as that, really. But
not totally Minutemen. It's you guys. It's your voice. Your sounds. You're playing. But and I didn't know about this until about 5 years ago. A cat named Penty in Finland turned me on to it, man. And I was like, wow! I wish I would have known these dudes in those days.
Yeah, it's amazing for me to be talking to you about it, you know, and to have met you at the Brudenell and now to be talking to you about it, because I mean it completes the circle, but it also blows my mind that, you know, we were just in this little bubble, in this little scene in Leeds, you know, before the internet or anything, before everyone was connected, and we you know, and really bands in that scene, a lot of them just came and went, didn't even record or release anything, and it was a very self-sufficient, and like we were just doing it for our own community and for our own satisfaction. And Solanke was definitely one of those bands that we threw together and just did it totally for our own satisfaction. And, you know, bizarrely, like Sned from Flat Earth Records offered to do a record. So it got documented, you know, and I'm really grateful that it did. So you know, it was like loads of bands similar to Solanke, not musically, but in terms of the mentality of like just putting them together with no real sense of like where it's going to go or anything or any ambition. It was just doing it, you know, just to do it, just for the love of doing it. So.
Yeah, I understand that, but I don't know if you were such in a bubble, because how did you know about Buzz or Hal?
Well, no, I mean, we were, the Minutemen were a really important band, you know, for me then and for like a lot of people in our scene. So, I mean, we knew about good music, but I mean, specifically, I discovered them from Santa Cruz skateboard videos.
Oh, yeah. you don't know how many dudes have told me that.
Yeah, Streets of Fire. Yeah. So, I was a skateboarder, and that video introduced me to like so many good bands all in one like, you know, big dose. So that was a total game changer. Once you've sort of been introduced to like all this new stuff, then you just kind of search it out in the record shop, and you know, you looked on the label's catalog and see who else is on that label, and really had to put a lot of effort into discovering music.
Oh yeah. I know what you mean. And how long did Solanke last?
It's probably 95 to sort of, I'd say 3 or 4 years maybe. We played the last gig on my 27th birthday, I think. So that would mean it lasted about 6 years, but it wasn't active for that whole time. We were probably active for maybe like 2 or 3 years, and you know, kind of hiatus in the occasional gig.
Sure. And back to the making of that record, how was it composed?
Well, like I said, it was like we just wanted to do a Minutemen band because we love the Minutemen, and you know, usually I would never ever do that. I would just think, what's the fucking point of making a band that sounds like another band? Because they've already done it. So
yeah.
This is a complete exception to my rule, because we just wanted to just do it just for the sake of it and just to have fun with it. And the concept was that like we're not gonna spend any more time than we need to writing the songs or recording the songs. There was complete economy and thrift in putting it all together. So you know,
right? No filler, all killer. But, now but part of the actual, title,
the actual catalyst for doing it,
sorry,
was I was organizing a gig in Leeds, just around the corner from where the Brudenell is, and we needed a third band for the bill, so the solution was to make a band, and that you know, that was Solanke basically. So we had 2 weeks to write a set, so we wrote a set in 2 weeks and then played a gig. So that was like the attitude from the start.
Understood. Now that title, is it completely like the Minutemen one? It's, you got the address where you live, and then the Solanke guy is your landlord.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Thank you.
Now, let me give you some insight to the Minutemen one. We made that record for $50. One side was live to two-track. And that's all only, you know, you didn't have to mix it, right? That's where the $50 went. The other side, we traded a well, Ethan James said, you give me a song from Radio Tokyo tape comp, and I'll do one of yours. And he didn't know about us, so we put three of them together and told him it was one. Because they were little. Look right at the end of the first side. November 27, 2020, Dishwater Pedro Show, special guest, Neil Turpin. Hold tight for hour two.
Yeah, I mean, we just wanted to do something in the spirit, you know.
Yeah. It wasn't like, okay, you be Georgie and you be Dean.
Yeah. I mean, we wanted to just use that energy and keep the song short and keep it really direct and keep that energy level and that kind of those kind of tempos and also, you know, that kind of like those kind of funk, I suppose you could call it, influences.
Sure. But we didn't
want to like. We also made it completely obvious that it was, you know, where the influence was coming from with the title and some of the song titles and also
the titles,
you know,
but the spiel is nothing like ours.
That's true. Yeah.
I mean, it's totally you guys. You look. I gotta tell people it's November 27, 2020. Second hour of the Walk from Pedro show.
Like cardboard, and the vocals don't cut through. In the dark, windowless, squalor of the practice room. Broken strings. Got the taste here and here and here and here. In this filthy world of ringing ears. In this filthy room with ringing ears. Another filthy room. And ringing ears. Play the song 100 times so you can play it without thinking. Song another 100 times so you can play it when you've been drinking. Another band set list on the floor. Begin to question what you're doing this for. What does it mean, this DIYC? Another band set list on the floor. Begin to question what you're doing this for. What you doing this for? DIYC. Another band's set list on the floor. Begin to question what you're doing this for.
Thank you.
cards on shelf, pictures in frame. Old furniture and ticking clock on the wall. Turning on the wheel, turning on the wheel, turning on the wheel, turning. Thoughts of you kill the room as rag and bone fill the air. Like a call to prayer, like craters on the moon, space and more space, nothing handed on a plate.
Lock for Pedro show. Start off the second hour, Practice Room from Neil Turpin. I just congratulate him on his fucking righteous choice of semantics there and not saying rehearse. Then we had Sam Bennett, Tokyo, dealt a real bad hand. Waku Waku Kingdom, the Shige in Berlin, with Doggy Bag live, right? Troopa Troop out of Gdansk. But anyhow, Mint Deuce, Focaccia, but they're not from Italy. Maybe Australia. Free Moral Agents, Tredier, something like. Ikey was in this band, Long Beach, Strong Beach, across the harbor here, and died on a beach in Mexico, like in his mid 30s. His heart went. And beautiful man, beautiful musician. Finally, The Wheel, Neil Turpin. So, now when I last shared stage with you, it was with Bilge Pump. So when does Bilge Pump get going? I've played, by the way, I got no more Bilge Pump to play because I've played every fucking tune that I found from you guys. Unless you got some like practice everything. Shit or something. Yeah, because I love it, man. I love it.
That's impressive, and you know, I'm very grateful that you've dug so deep into the back catalogue. I mean, obviously this pandemic has slowed us in our tracks, so I mean, we've not done anything new since.
Oh yeah, nothing new, but let's go back, because I don't really know the history, except that it has drummer from Salonki.
Yeah, okay, well, Bilge Pump existed from the early 90s, so they predate, I think they predate Solanke slightly.
Okay.
Because Joe and Emlyn had been in Leeds for like four or so years before I got there. So they were already, you know, making making gigs happen and making like a kind of underground noise rock scene happen. And Bilge Pump came out of all that, and they initially had a drum machine. So they were a band that I'd go and see, and, you know, that's how I became aware of them. But Joe ended up moving into a house that I lived in, and that's kind of, it's just as simple as that, really. You know, I was just like, you know, come on, you're struggling with this drum machine, you know, you can't really hear it, and you're going out of time with it because you can't hear it through the shit PAs that you're playing through, you know, which was just typical of like the, you know, just every gig ever, really. But so yeah, I just kind of gravitated into the band, really, and then it sort of started
the listeners, Joe is the guitar man, and he also makes amps, right?
He does, yeah, very loud ones.
And then the bass man ever?
Emlyn,
yeah, yeah. Gaelic name, huh? Watts got a lot to learn. He's great, man. I you know, of course, I have to tell you, I always watched the bass first, but then the drummer, especially the kick drum, because that's kind of our closest. It looks like a guitar, but our closest note is actually the fucking kick drum. So what was the first Bilge Pump gig like?
I can remember the first one that I went to see, and I loved it because it was, you know, it was just raucous.
They were doing the band with the drum machine without you. Okay, I understand now.
Yeah, and I just loved it because there was this, like, you know, the intention was a sort of like industrial sounding thing, you know, like probably they were going for like Big Black or something like that. But you know, there was this constant struggle to stay in time with the drum machine, this unrelenting, pounding rhythm. I just remember this, like, amazing kind of unintended drama, especially between Joe and the drum machine. So I just love that. But the band also just had, you know, just tons of character as well. And it was a real underdog band for a long time in that lead scene as well.
Oh, that's great. That's great. What about the first gig when you played with them?
My first ever gig with them? God, I don't know.
Remember, it's a lot for Pedro's show. There's no hard questions and there's no wrong answers.
I mean, it might be an amalgamation of a few different ones, but I mean, at the time I was playing in like probably 6 or 7 bands. So it's really hard to just remember the first ever one. Joe's got a much better memory for me than this. So I wish, you know, he was here to help me out.
I got to tell you, it tripped me out when I heard your name because, wow, Leeds, that's too close to the ocean. But maybe some canal boats, what do they call them, long boats?
Where the fuck is the
bilge pump?
Well, you know, the band was already called Bilge Pump when I joined, so I can't really answer for that.
It's a good name. But it's kind of a garbage name. You know, you don't want to be in the bilge, right? I don't know if you ever saw the Sand Pebbles, but only the coolies go below the bilge plates, right? And Steve McQueen's like, it's my engine. I'm getting under there. Yeah, it's a lot of drama on it. Look, I want to play, how do you pronounce this? Ovzy?
Ovzul.
Oh, that's an L. Okay, Ovzul. You're missing a vowel there.
Here we go.
For Peter Show, yeah. Ovzel. Neil Turpin, which is like a fucked up way of spelling oval, but wrong. Yeah. Then Lydia Kavina with her version of Fantasia on the, what's that thing called? Theremin. She was one of the proteges of the cat who invented it. His story is trip. Gulag, all that shit. Spies. Spy devices. Giles Corey, grave filled with books. See, that's what happens with all that knowledge here, Neil. And then finally, Low Lows, Neil Turpin. So tell me about this Neil Turpin record.
You asking me? Okay. it's just something that came up in lockdown, basically. You know, I was just had nothing to do. Like, no more Billish Pump gigs, no gigs, no music. Everything just sort of stopped in its tracks. So, With the assistance of a very good friend, Michael Ward, he just basically gave me little tutorials on how to get into home recording. And then I went from figuring out how to, you know, select a track and press record and took it from there.
Well, not just there though, Neil, because there's more than drums you're playing there. You know how to do all this other shit.
Yeah, I mean, to a degree, I mean, to a degree, I've picked up other instruments and, you know, make a sound with them. But, like, I just kind of, yeah, I tried to push it through and kind of, at the start of lockdown, I got a few songs and I just thought, fuck it, I'll try and make an album. I'll make that my goal for the end of lockdown, you know, it's like, I'll make an album. And then I just got really, really into it and, you know, completely focused and pretty much spent hours every day just either writing or recording or mixing and editing and like learning how to just, you know, getting my head around like how to do it all on a laptop and, you know, just learning what effects do and how to mix and all the rest. So, I mean, it was the whole bag all in one and it kept me very busy for, you know, for months and months.
You know, they say over here sometimes that no one is in the doing.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's the only way I learn is by just doing, for sure.
Well, you talked about some history with skateboarding. I don't think you're fucking popping ollies on the first ride.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And what happens if you fall down? Do you talk your way out of it? No. You get back up, right?
Yeah, you just... Yeah, exactly.
What was
you
that?
Just,
there was know. That Leeds band. I did some gigs with Dose. Chumbawamba.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
You get knocked down, you get up, knocked down, something like that. Tub bumping.
Yeah, I played drums. I filled in for Dunstan. Who was the singer in Chumbawamba. He did a new band called Interrobang, and I played drums for them a few times a couple of years ago.
Small world. I know Maves. Yeah. A little bit.
Oh.
Yeah. We're at the end of the second hour. November 27, 2020, Dish Wap Peter Show special guest, Neil Turpin. Hold tight for hour three. November 27, 2020, it's the third hour of the Wap Peter Show.
Thank you. myself right now. Yeah, now he's coming towards me.
Zimmerman was chasing Trayvon Martin, not the other way around.
He said his man was watching him, so he put his hoodie on.
One of the witnesses said, I heard the boy shout out for help, right? He didn't stand his ground, he ran towards the guy. Look, think about that, right? And then, of course, we know that he follows him and then eventually shoots him. So what did he think he was going to do? Trayvon was going to kill him with his bag of Skittles?
Yeah, punch him to death?
One thing that is not possible is that they have done a fair and impartial job of investigating this murder. That is not what has happened at all. It is an indefensible case here.
This is clown-ass justice. I mean, it's not justice at all, in fact.
It's incredible that this guy is not behind bars right now. It's amazing. He is not in custody. He's out there. He's free.
This is clown-ass justice. I mean, it's not justice at all, in fact.
feel like you're dancing. Dancing at the wrong wedding. Dancing, oh. What is the purpose behind all of this purposeful shuffling? You might say that it's a parenthesis of infinitesimal gravity. Dancing, oh. Dancing, oh. Dancing, oh.
Pedro Show, talking about reading books. Dick Lloyd's Everything is Combustible, incredible, recommend. Mike Barnes' book on Cat and Beefheart, John Swed's book on Sun Ra, Space Play. Music people reading books about music, I think, is a good thing. When I went in that studio to do that John Coltrane Meditations Love Spree, my brother, the reference, right? $175. I've never spent that much money on a book before. Present to myself. All his gigs, all his record. Started the third hour off with Humbled We Become, Neil Turpin. Tragicomedy with Scientific Proof, Bronze Age UFO, Fat Noise Waller. Fats Noise, well, yeah, noise in between the name Fats Waller, of course. Idiot. Slow Learner What? Jerome Parker Wells, St. Louis Skittles and Tea. That's for you, Neil. Skittles is a weird candy. I think Don Trump threw a couple at Ms. Merkel. Said, don't say I never gave you anything or some bullshit. She jumped right up at the table. This is a couple years ago. Tollum with Cells and Situations. And finally, Dancing. Neil Turpin. Yeah. Dancing. A dance song from Neil Turpin. So you said you had a lot of these songs, or you had some songs before you went into this project.
Yeah. I'd written two songs. I'd written Dancing and New York City Marathon, January and February this year. So I went into it with two songs. So I did have the intention of like recording, you know, before all this crazy shit happened. But when that did happen, that really brought it into focus and sort of got the wheel turning a lot faster.
Yeah. You know, I think we get used to gigs and we think that's the only way to do music. There was a great singer, man, Harry Nilsson. He was stage fright, right? I don't think he did one fucking gig.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, that's why you're on the show. Factoid. No, so when you write songs, do you ever write on the drums?
With this thing I've been doing, the solo project, no, but in other bands that I've been in, yes, you know, things can start from the drums and have done, like some Bilge Pump songs have started that way, and like another band I used to play in, Quack Quack, was often, you know, things started like rhythm up.
You don't know how glad I am to hear that, man. You know, Chico Hamilton tried to get songwriting credit in the 60s. Oh, drummers can't write songs. Bullshit, I see.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those, you know, it's one of those music industry tropes, isn't it, that you don't get credit. You know, you can't copyright a drum beat.
Biggest mistake Minutemen ever did, yeah, you can't copyright a title. Now, I understand that, but the drum beat? I know you should hear Mr. Sales talk about Ig, right? The Lust for Life. God damn it, that's me. You know. Anyway, you know, where did this idea that drummers are retarded, you know, biggest mistake Minutemen made was putting Georgie in the back. You know, the last 20 years, I've had all my drummers downstage, right at the lip.
Yeah.
Why be in denial? It's fucking rhythm music. And, you know, and we're all doing like little rhythm riffs anyway, you know? Drummer's just obvious about it.
I agree. I mean, I don't know when the drummer got stuck at the back of the stage, but it's, you know, it was probably just like some kind of functional reason, sound reason, you know? But yeah, I mean, if there's an exciting drummer in the band, you want to see them play.
There was band leader. Gene Krupa was a band leader.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, Louis Belson, you know, I don't know. I think it was some weirdos in arena rock. That whole weird, you know, deformed thing. It's hard to even call that shit rock and roll. It's fucking the Nuremberg rally. I want to play what you just mentioned, New York City Marathon. If I know one thing,
dragging surfer, splashing water in my face like it's California, not the Northeast. Of shortcomings, in spite of all these shortcomings, I comb my hair, brush my teeth. But if I know one thing, yeah, if I know one. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think I knew, even with this solo project, if nothing else, I would be able to, like, I would be able to make it sound, like, passable, because I knew the drums weren't going to suck.
Right. You know, if you can play drums, I think going on to the other instruments is just learning fingering and shit, because it's rhythm, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that was a massive focus of recording, was making everything groove, making sure I just hit the beat in the right spot, whether it was acoustic guitar or bass or electric guitar or whatever it was. It had to land in the right place, and I have, you know, my ear was really tuned for that.
Yeah, that's one of the dangers. I mean, there's a lot of good things about being able to record on your own in your own pad and shit, but one of the big dangers is sounding cut and paste.
Yeah.
Ooh, I hate that. Man, you hear that in these big fancy records that are coming out. It don't even have to be a home thing, but you're so right about everything coming together, and especially with the groove. I got to tell the people, we played New York City Marathon. Yeah, what's a Preston guy like that? Were you impressed? Did you go to New York City?
I have been, but I haven't run a marathon there. I was reading a book by Haruki Murakami.
Great writer.
What we talk about when we talk about running.
Right, because he likes to run.
Yeah, that's it. So I was really enjoying that book, and it was just around the time that I was starting to write for this album. So New York City Marathon just fit. It just fit. So it just fit with the chords that I had, and then it went from there, really.
You know, he's into music. He ran a jazz club in Tokyo before he's gotten to writing big time. After New York City Marathon, we had IMMR with Good Luck, Spider Milk, out of Chicago, I think. Music with My Insane Friend, Give or Take a Second. Ben Watson hit me to that. I've been invited to be part of this improvised kind of thing called the XAMMAS. Yeah, AMM was a big band influence on Sid Barrett, 67 or something, so I think it's an extension. But and then finally, there's a drum solo. I found a drum solo in two parts from you. So I glued them both together, but so all of a sudden the shaker appears magically in your hand. But I just wanted people here to be man alone on the drums. But what's your take on improvised music, Neil?
I like it.
Yeah, but why isn't there more Neil Turpin improvised recordings?
The first track on the album is an improvisation.
Oh, okay.
I mean, everything else...
Wrong again, you know, what?
everything else is, you know, basically it's kind of straight song, but that the first thing was, yeah, I mean, it's based around some drones... in the background, and then like a kind of improvised bass part, and then I just threw the drums down and then just kind of figured out a bit of a pattern for the guitar, but that is kind of more or less improvised. But I mean, as a drummer, I love it. I mean, as a drummer, I you know, that's kind of where it's at in a lot of ways. That's where you sort of really come into focus and kind of, you know, listen and communicate. But I mean, improvised music in general, I guess it's just like any other music, you know, it's either good or it's not. So I mean, some people do it great, and other times it just, you know, you don't have time for it. But right. Yeah, I mean, as a way to communicate with other musicians, yeah, I mean, it's right up there.
And your take on somebody like Clyde Stubblefield?
Oh, I love him. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, because I've had some people, I don't need to do that. Well, it might help. Just a little practice.
he's obviously up there. He's a legend. He's like a landmark, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, he worked for Mr. Brown, and he was a drummer man himself. That three trap kits on stage, and not polyrhythm, right? They're playing the. You better be fucking sock tight.
Yeah.
Or it's gonna flam like a motherfucker, right? Where can people find you on the internet?
Bandcamp is just Neil Turpin. Bandcamp, Neil Turpin.
Yeah, we gotta spell that, people. NEILTURPIN.bandcamp.com. Go there, Check it out. You got something in the works right now?
Yeah, I'm just continuing to write and record at home. So
great.
Planning to just have another album next year.
And look, you've been, you know, since the Inviolator days, you got a lot of experience.
Infiltrator, yeah, Infiltrator, but I prefer it. Constipator. That's the one.
Invalidator. fucked up. Anyway, what kind of advice could you tell somebody young getting into this racket?
I think, like, don't expect to be rich or famous, but expect it to just enrich your life in ways which you could just, you know, never imagine. You just meet interesting people and have interesting experiences, and, you know, potentially see the world in a way which you wouldn't, and you hopefully get some deep satisfaction out of being creative.
That's beautiful. I love it, man. And when you get done with this next batch of tunes, will you come back on the show and we could talk about it?
I would love to, yeah.
Okay, man. Combate, right? Go for it. People, it's been the November 27, 2020 edition of Wapito Show. Keep your powder dry.